Today's Study Saturday episode of the Raised with Jesus podcast comes from the Point of Grace Campus Ministry in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. Our guest speaker today is Professor Pete Bladel, talking about a Christian's guide to navigating the truth in an entertainment culture. Here goes.
How's everybody doing? I'm happy to be here. So again, my name's Peter Bladel. You can call me Pete. That's fine. I chair the theater department at Bethany Lutheran College. Some of you may not know that the Wells has a sister synod, and it's you just take the W off the front, and it's the ELS, and it's about 1/10 of the size of the WELS. And so that's what Bethany is. Bethany is an ELS college, and I live in Mankato, Minnesota. But the nice thing is I was able to come here to Mankato because I've got a lot of relatives. I mean, in Milwaukee. Sorry, where am I? I was able to come to Milwaukee because I've got quite a number of relatives here. And so I'm very grateful to my in-laws for putting us up last night. We stayed over at their house. We'll stay over there one more time. But what I wanted to talk to you guys about is suggestion, deception, influence, and what are all these things? And influence, we'll start with influence. As a matter of fact, I've got my cool dude clicker here. So there it is, influence. One thing that is interesting about influence is that sometimes maybe we don't know when it's happening. So I just want to set up I want to do a couple demonstrations of some things, ways influence can be used that maybe you never thought about or that you've never seen. And so for me to explain this, it kind of goes like this. If you and I are driving in a car and we're sitting next to each other, but somehow I had, if I had control of every time we turned left. So every time we turned left, I'm in control. But I can do that without you knowing. I can turn left enough times to where I can actually get to the destination that I want to get to without your knowledge. This is kind of a bigger concept than I have time to necessarily describe. But does that somehow make some kind of sense at the moment? So right now, sir, right there. Oh, just as you were taking a bite. So sorry. I want you to think of. Could you just think of a name? Doesn't have to be a person you know. It just a name. Let's make it one or two syllables. If you can just think of a name, and then really loudly, so everybody in the room can hear it. Can you say the name?
Steve.
Did you hear it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. All right, so it's Steve. So did you feel influenced in any way? Okay, so good. So we're gonna go on a thing like that. And I talked with you before, and this is, was it Alex? Okay, so everybody say hi, Alex. Alex has an iPhone. I'm an iPhone user, but I wanted to use somebody else's iPhone, so he just happens to have an iPhone. So I'll use that in a second. But before I do that, I just want to write down a number, if I can, with my red pen. Okay, good enough. And so this, and I'm going to keep that right where it's totally visible, where everybody can see it. Okay, so it's right there. Alex, you. Can you just bring that up here? It might be best if I can actually, because I know if I go out there, it's going to feed back. That's just the way it goes. Okay, so we've got perfect. Okay, your phone. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to use the calculator. Okay. What I'm looking for, I just want to see if this works out. Good enough. Okay. Yeah. This is different than mine. All right. So on these calculators, all I want to do is I want to just start adding numbers up. I'd like if somebody could just, you right there in the black shirt, will you do perfect. Will you just give me a 3-digit number, but the middle digit, could you just make it odd for me?
Sure.
137. Can you see that okay? Is it coming out okay? Okay, 137, and then I'll multiply it. I'll multiply it by another number. You right there, sir, with your hands touching by the table, can you just give me a 2-digit number, both numbers even?
24.
Okay, times 24. You can all see it? then can I get you with the pink blazer, ma'am? Can you, what year were you born? What? 1996. Okay, so times 1996. Okay, good. Is all right? He's all right, you can see. Okay, what I would like, you ma'am, right there, can you give me just a single one-digit number?
Two.
Easy, okay. Times two. All right, and then I'm going to have you, I'm not even going to look, can you just think of a single digit, but it's even. And we're going to divide this time, okay? So divided by, you just type in the single digit number. Okay, good. And then you press equals, and I don't want to, I'm getting out of here. Okay. Okay, so do you have a number in front of you?
Yeah.
Is this a small number or a big number?
Big number.
Okay, is it a 6-digit number, 7-digit number?
7-digit.
Does it begin with a 7? Is the next number a 3?
Yeah.
0?
Yeah.
3?
Yep.
Is it a 0?
Yeah.
Is it then a 7?
Yeah.
Is it an 8?
Yeah.
Okay, so I influenced that number, because remember, right over here, that's the number that, can you see that? Can you see that that's the number I wrote down? So again, I was turning left every time everyone else was turning right. So I was trying to get you guys to think of certain numbers because I didn't really care about the numbers as much as I could figure out what the destination was going to be. So here was the destination. If you were wondering about this, can you just hold that for me, Alex, for a second? Let's make sure Alex gets his phone. A big round of applause for Alex, by the way. Okay, so read that number out loud for me, real Alex, so that I can make sure that everybody sees this. Okay,
7-3-0.
I'm going to write this in block letters if that's okay, or block numbers, I guess. 7-3-0-3-0-7-8. Because this is how on my Texas Instruments when I was growing up, if you put this number in my old calculator that I had math in when I was in school, it always did the digital numbers that look like this. The reason I picked this number to influence so that you can't think that I wasn't influencing you, I wanted to make sure that this was something I could prove, is because if you turn this over, that spells my last name. So B-L-O-E-D-E-L, okay? So that's how influence works. This is probably a different kind of influence than you've ever seen, but I will give that to Alex, and thank you for letting me use your phone. Okay, and then one last thing, too, is what's your name?
Nathaniel.
Nathaniel, you probably didn't know that I was influencing you, too, because inside my wallet, I've got another wallet. And inside that wallet, I have a folded up business card, and on that business card, it says, someone will think of the name Steve. Right? Steve was the name that he thought of, right? Is that correct? Okay, so what I'm trying to get at here is that influence begs for proof. Okay, if you're going to influence somebody who wants to be, somebody who is influenced, they're going to look for ways that there are little proofs, there are little ways to know that you're being influenced. Well, so that's why I needed to prove to you that this was indeed influence and that this wasn't some kind of just mumbo jumbo, okay? But proof isn't always necessary, but it begs for it. It wants it, okay? So, my question to you is, do you know when you are being influenced? Kind of a rhetorical question, but probably no, not all the time, right? Would you agree that you don't always know? But you know some of the time. I mean, obviously you can say that, who's your favorite band? Oh, I like this band. They're very influential in the music that I listen to, whatever else. Okay, the next question would be, do you know when you are being deceived? Okay, so I guess the natural question would be, or the natural answer would be, no, we don't always know that when we're being deceived. We all know, fraud happens. We don't always know when we're being, deceived. Okay, but can you tell the difference?
Yeah.
Okay, and how many people think like earlier today that they've been deceived? Okay, interestingly, none of you raised your hands, which means that I also influenced you in a way that I was planning before I came here. None of you raised your hands, and I was kind of banking on that, because you were. I just deceived you all just now. None of that was influence. What I wanted to do was I wanted to show that I could make you believe that I did it. And I lied. It was a bald-faced lie. I just totally did a magic trick for you guys. I did not know the number thing and the name Steve thing. Complete magic trick, because what you didn't know is that I'm also a magician. Okay, so how do we know then? So, but the thing is, I gave you some pretty astonishing proofs, though. I gave you some things that looked like it could have been the real thing. I did a magic trick, but then I did say, I told you other things that somehow solidified the lie, made the lie even seem better. So now you're kind of embroiled in the lie, where you can't even, if I say, this is for real, you know, right? Do you believe it? And you kind of go, yeah, I guess I kind of did believe it. Or even if you didn't, if you didn't raise your hand, and the reason you didn't is because you're here with peers. And a lot of times we won't be the, you know, there's a saying in Japan, the nail that stands up is the one that gets pounded down. So when we're in groups, that's all influence, and it's all suggestion, and what I did to you guys is deception. I just plain up fooled you. That's what I meant to try. But the influence wasn't that. The influence I wanted was that you would believe that I did it for real. And nobody contested it. So I got to say, I got at least half of you. Raise your hand if I got half of you. Raise your hand if I kind of got you. Okay. All right. Good. Okay. So proof is not the same thing as truth. Okay. So truth is being in accord with fact or reality. Truth is absolute. Now, this gets muddied in today's culture because we get a lot of people saying, no, truth is different things. But the very definition of truth simply is this, that there are certain things that we have to be able to hang our hat on. If I go over to that speaker and if I put my finger on it, I know that I will touch it because it's truth. It's the same kind of thing where I've taught my kids growing up, never touch the hot stove because you will get burned. That's the truth. If I tell them something else, then that's getting into something called relativism. Okay, so what's relativism? We know that the term truth is often used in relative terms. Relativism is the idea that points of view have no real absolute truth or validity in and of themselves, but rather only relative or subjective value. That's that whole idea that my truth might be different than your truth. Have you heard this? It's very popular. It's happening all over the place. Okay, but this is not really the truth, though. We know from our earliest experiences what the truth is, and things are either true or they are not. Now, I totally get the idea that there are some things that are subjective and some things that are objective. I totally do get that. Okay, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about certain things that we know as absolutes that sometimes get muddied in our culture. Okay, so how does it get muddied? And how is our culture different than, say, 85 years ago? What I've got right here is, like I was telling you guys, I'm from Mankato, Minnesota. In Mankato, there's a college. The college is like coming up on its 90th anniversary or something like that. This is the student handbook from 85 years ago. So this is an antique. I just sort of ran into this. Somebody handed this to me. What kills me is like the cost of college was like in the hundreds of dollars. And it's only 30 pages long. So this is like all the course offerings 85 years ago. It's great. But also, here's a direct quote from the Bethany Lutheran College, 1932 to 1933 student catalog. Get a load of this. Right here. This is what it says. Bethany Lutheran College catalog. Students are not permitted to visit questionable places of amusement. Since most motion pictures shown today are offensive to the devout Christian, we regard motion picture houses as questionable places of amusement. Did I mention that I direct theater at Bethany Lutheran College? Things have changed, right? There's some stuff that has changed. What distance have we traveled from 1932 to now? What even is? I even showed this to a number of my colleagues at Bethany Lutheran College. They couldn't even believe that statement because Bethany Lutheran College hosts an international film festival. You know, it's something that we've been doing for 6 years now, and people from all over the world are submitting films to Bethany Lutheran College because of this. So this whole statement, I showed it to the media arts people over at Bethany, and they were like on the floor. They couldn't believe it. But I love to look at these things and just sort of see, okay, but what was the wisdom of the age? What was the wisdom 85 years ago or 87 years ago? There would have been some, all right? Because they weren't dummies, and I would never in a million years say that they were unwise in putting that in the handbook. But we have, since then, more than ever, become an entertainment culture. If you don't think so, I mean, I'm looking at the bulletin board over here, and I'm seeing right there it says the Cultural Diversity Task Force. Are there a number of international students here at WLC? So at Bethany, we've got like just a bunch of people from Africa and from Asia and all over the place. And you want to know what they think of America, what they know of America before they come? Movies. They were shocked to find out that we don't all have guns. It's amazing. You know, what they know of America is what they see in the movies, and everything that they see in the movies paints a really interesting picture. It kind of doesn't compute with what we really are. Okay? But we're an entertainment culture. Things that our culture holds dear are things like stories, plays, musicals, Netflix and Hulu TV, obviously, movies, concerts, poetry and lyrics, bands. You all have favorite bands, probably. YouTube videos. I even recently learned from my students the other day what a Vine Comp was. I thought they were saying Mein Kampf, which, of course, is really different. They were telling me, oh, yeah, I just watched a bunch of Mein Kampf. What? What are you guys watching? Vine comps, whatever. So, and for those of you who are my age and older, for those of you who don't know what Mein Kampf is, that was Hitler's big book, right? The Hitler's Manifesto, My Struggle. But Vine comps are, I don't even know if Vine exists, so now they put them all in a compilation. So Vines are these 6-second videos, am I getting this right? And then it's just a compilation of these 6-second videos that are put together in funny ways. Anyways, my students are all watching them, I guess. Video games are humongous. Everyone's going back to the dorms and they're playing video games. How many people, just because I'm curious, played a video game today? 2 of you. Okay. It's different in Mankato, apparently. Okay, advertising, we're an advertising culture. And now even sporting events. There was, I don't know how it was here in Milwaukee, but recently there was like Carrie Underwood's doing the NFL football song or something like that, and there were a bunch of people all mad that there's a new song. You know, because now that matters. I don't know. But sporting events have become more and more dramatic. That's one of the things I'm kind of talking about, is all of these things share a common thread called drama. And drama isn't probably what you guys are used to thinking about it as. Drama isn't the thing where, oh, I couldn't be around, you know, Jordy, because Jordy is so dramatic, whatever. I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about things that go back thousands of years. Okay, so Plato. How many people have ever read Plato's Republic in a class? It's probably not reading that you just do because it's fun. Okay, so in Plato's Republic, he takes a big portion of that to talk about theater, and he talks about imitators. He says, this is Plato. He wanted to ban drama, so plays, tragedies, comedies, from his ideal society. The whole idea behind Plato's Republic is that he's formulating an idea. If I had the opportunity to create a perfect society, what would it look like? And so he says, well, it would be without drama. We wouldn't have any drama. We wouldn't have any plays. As a matter of fact, if I do this right, we probably wouldn't have any imitators of any kind. Okay, he said that drama is imitation and that imitation is thrice removed from the truth. What he meant by that, and really, if you look at this from 21st century eyes, thrice removed from the truth is really twice removed from the truth, and that simply means you have the real thing. So let's say you've got the speaker. There it is. First, the creator thinks of the idea of speaker. I am now conceptualizing speaker. That's the first thing. Then the second thing is right here. Okay, now after I've conceptualized it, I have now made speaker. Okay, this is the actual speaker then. And then the third removal from the truth is then the person who paints the picture of the speaker and shows it to you and says, look it, speaker. Okay, so that's the imitator. Okay, and Plato would say, no, we don't want that third guy. We don't want the imitator because that's a lie. An imitation is never going to be the truth because now it's somebody looking at the truth through different kinds of glasses. Now there's room for interpretation and there's room for error. And Plato didn't want any error. Here's what Plato says. He says, and shall we just carelessly allow children to hear any casual tales which may be devised by casual persons and to receive in their minds ideas for the most part which are the very opposite of those which we should wish them to have when they grow up? Now, I'm just telling you, this is not like some kind of homeschool mom. This is a pagan. This is somebody from thousands of years ago who said this. It's not, you know, we sometimes as Christians look at that and go, well, that sounds reasonable. But this is pagan stuff. They were concerned about that stuff too, just like your moms and dads might be. Oh, and here's another thing. Here's what's funny. Plato's Republic, it was written in what's called a Socratic dialogue. And that means that he was a master manipulator. Because while he's condemning drama, he actually wrote the Republic in dramatic form with characters. And they had lines. The whole thing is basically a play. It's called a Socratic dialogue. Go figure. Okay? So, dramatic theorists and philosophers throughout history have argued over the influence of drama, perhaps more than any other topic. So it's not like they're talking so much about the entertainment of drama. I teach, and I'm teaching it right now. When I go back to Bethany, I'll be embroiled in some heavy debates about what some of these theorists are talking about. All of these theorists that I have here, Aristotle, St. Augustine, Tertullian, Jeremy Collier, Coleridge, Schiller, Soren Kierkegaard, Moliere, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Goethe, Nietzsche, and Brecht, and there's just a zillion others. They're not talking about entertainment. They're talking about influence. They're talking about what is the most important thing about drama. It's not to entertain you, but entertainment is a huge part of it, and we'll get to that in a second. So how can we as learners better understand what's coming at us in movies, drama, or entertainment in general, and nowadays it's video games, all this stuff. How can we get to know what's coming at us all the time? There's some audio here, so hopefully this will go.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe.
I don't know. Seinfeld used to be the big sitcom when I was coming up, you know, so I don't know if you guys watch Seinfeld or not, but the big moral dilemma is that Jerry Seinfeld, this guy right here, is going to have to tell somebody a lie. And his good friend George is saying, well, you know what? It's not really a lie. The lie you're about to tell, you can't think of it as a lie if you believe that it's true. And so is that true? There's a moral dilemma there. So let me go into suggestion now. So we talked a little bit about influence. What is suggestion? Suggestion is a part of influence, okay? This is simply this. If you're given the quick definition of suggestion, it's an idea that someone proposes, okay? You accept or you reject that suggestion. It's totally within your realm of as somebody who discerns. What do I do? Okay, so a simple suggestion. I'll give an example in a second. But vocab.com says this. When someone gives an order, like in the military, it has to be carried out. So don't look at suggestion as an order. Okay, an order. If I'm telling my kids, go clean your room, That's irrefutable. that's something that they got to do, okay? That's not a suggestion. It's or a command, you know, it's a command. That's why they call them commanders in the army, in the armed forces. On the other hand, a suggestion is like an idea that's kind of optional. Suggestions are ideas that can be taken or they can be rejected. It's up to the person who receives the suggestion. And there's a number of types of these. I'll talk about three for real here, okay? So the basic. I suggest that you go, here's my example today, it's an example. I suggest that you go to Cheesecake Factory for lunch and try their Thai chicken lettuce wraps. They are to die for. The people who are laughing knows that that's what I had for lunch today. Okay, so can you give me other examples of just a basic suggestion like this? Now, the thing is, you can, I'm telling you to do it. Go to Cheesecake Factory. Go to Cheesecake, you gotta try their lettuce wraps. They are the best. Is that optional or do you have to do it? It's like it's optional, right? You don't have to do that, but that's my suggestion. Give me another example. Somebody give me an example of a suggestion quick. Super fast. Yeah, go ahead. Okay, good. That coffee's really good. Good. Advertising, perfect. Anybody have another one? Simpy, anything, fast. Okay, we'll keep going. All right, so then there's the sequential, okay? The sequential. This is sort of a logical trail that we create for ourselves. It is, if it is suggested to us that one thing is true, we naturally make connections that other things must be true due to the validity of the first thing. So if this is true, then that must be true. So a lot of people, these are kind of close to syllogisms. They're a little different. A lot of people will, you know, if I say my dad, okay, my Carl Bladel is my father. Carl Bladel loves classical music. Peter Bladel is his son and is a Bladel. Both true statements. Then finally, somebody might then come up with a theorem, a last part, an equals sign, if you will. It follows then that Peter Bladel loves classical music. You now see that that could be flawed. I do like classical music, but not like my dad, because it's all my dad listens to. Okay, I like rock. I like a lot of stuff my dad doesn't write. But you get that the third thing doesn't. It's not like math. It's not like 2 + 2 = 4. It could be like 2 + 2 = banana, which now we're getting subjective. Okay. Okay, so by the way, this is where we begin to understand that suggestions don't need to be spoken. So let me give you an example, okay? So this is part of the sequential thing, okay? Peer pressure, okay? Peer pressure is a single example of the sequential suggestive process. So, chicks dig Paul. Who's Paul? That's Paul. Okay? That's Paul, and these are the chicks, okay? They dig him, okay? They just do. Nobody told you that Paul is popular, but it's obvious. I mean, look at him. And I just found that. That was just clip art I found. I'm not that artistic. Paul is cool, okay? Why? Because the chicks. All right. Okay, so Paul started wearing a Pinterest t-shirt to school. There it is. And this, by the way, is the extent of my Photoshop skill. I was able to put the P on a shirt on a clip art thing. That's the best I can do. Okay, Paul is cool, we know that much, and he's wearing this shirt. Those shirts must be cool. Notice that we are willing to follow our own suggestions now, because we do this all the time. We're filling in the blanks. Nobody says that the shirt must be cool. It's simply that Paul is cool. We've determined that, because the chicks dig him. But now he's wearing this shirt. Suddenly now, that shirt matters. Because Paul's wearing it. It's kind of like the transitive property of cooldom. Now he's got a cool shirt on. We're filling in our own suggestions. Nobody had to say that. We do this all the time, and we don't even realize it. And that's why it's so effective. And that's why, this is in the small print, I just put this in, this works for real. Otherwise, advertisers wouldn't pay stars to wear their stuff, because they know it works, and they're paying millions of dollars to do this. So it's got to work, because it does. I am telling you, okay? Now everybody wants Pinterest t-shirts. I hope now that you guys will all start wearing those. That'd be great if I actually started something. Okay, so we were created to be social beings, so people tend to be much more suggestible in groups. That's why when at the end I said, how many people, raise your hand if you've never been deceived. Raise your hand if you know that you've been deceived today. Remember that question? 2 people raised their hand way in the back. Nobody else did. Some of you guys might have been on to me, but you didn't raise your hand. Why? Probably because of peer pressure. Probably because of this social thing. We don't want to be the nail that sticks up. Because why? The nail gets pounded down. Group dynamics fit into this perfectly. Okay? We are more suggestible in groups. So, by the way, to be consumers of drama is a collective experience. Even if we are alone in our home watching a show, we are not totally free of crowd dynamics. okay? It's a type of peer pressure. Like if you're watching a Netflix show and you turn on, what's that controversial one, 13 Reasons Why or whatever? You turn that on and you're watching something and you're probably feeling it. You're feeling the other people around the world. Okay, this must mean something because there's a buzz about this thing. And that's peer pressure right there. Even if it's in your own home, you're not immune to it. Okay? Theater critic Scott Nehring says this. If we are in the middle of a crowded theater when something questionable is presented, we are not in the best circumstance to defend ourselves. So it could be a nude scene. It could be a sex scene. It could be something gratuitously violent, whatever it is. Okay? When we're in that group dynamic, when we're in a theater by everybody else, how many people, raise your hand and be honest, how many people have ever walked out of a movie because of questionable material? Three of you. And it's because of this. Because we are not in the best circumstances to defend ourselves. The crowd is engaged with whatever is on the screen at that point. We are influenced by crowd dynamics to dispense with our personal inhibitions. Okay? So somehow now we kind of become part of this social thing. It's this social fabric and we can't ignore it. And we don't even know that it's working on us, but it is. Okay? So these social constraints play, and by the way, this is old theory. This is like what is those philosophers that I just had up on the board there. It's this. They've been writing about this stuff for thousands of years. These social constraints placed upon an individual's thought processes teach us to be passive when we're in an audience. The likewise, it's kind of like mob mentality, only in reverse. Because when we're in groups and things get violent, suddenly we become part of the violence too. And it's really interesting what we do in groups that we would never do by ourselves. Okay? Okay, another suggestion type, persuasive. This type of suggestion can be verbal or nonverbal communication techniques, but the end result is to induce belief or action. So, again, here's that influence piece, okay? To overtly influence. Things that help this kind of, okay, so we know it's to be persuasive. Things that help this are things like authority. Okay, if you go to the doctor's and he's going to tell you what's wrong with you, first of all, he comes in, he's probably wearing a stethoscope, you know. Nowadays, maybe they don't wear the white coats, I don't know. But they come in and she's telling you, my cardiologist doesn't wear the white thing because I've got a heart thing that every so often I got to see a cardiologist about. And she sits down, she tells me, okay, this, and I'm believing her. Why? Because she's the authority. I've set that up in my mind. I'm just kind of going, she knows about this, so somehow now I'm letting her tell me what I wouldn't know, okay? So she's teaching me, telling me things, okay? Another thing, ceremony. Passion is big. If somebody's really passionate, because that appeals to our emotions. Emotions are what really are, they're a trigger piece on this. And let me go on this emotion thing. Passion and emotion, we probably vote more on passion and more on emotion than we do on logic. And usually, whoever kills on the late night talk shows is probably the person who's going to get elected. Because we want to vote for the people we like more than the people who it makes sense to vote for. Because of emotion. Because of passion. Okay? And patterns. So, you know, just because I'm talking politics, think of a political campaign speech and all of the things that are in those things. So much more than the words chosen for a speech go into crafting the influence or the persuasion of the listener. Getting the audience to laugh and to like you, that's important. When you watch these things, next time there's a political convention or if you even go to a caucus, notice how many times there are patterns. Notice how there are chants that happen. All these things are meant to influence. It's just very, very interesting. So that's the persuasion type. And then the last one I wanted to talk, this is the fourth one, hypnotic. And actually, you guys are hypnotized more than you know. And it's probably happening right in front of your television set all the time. Hypnosis is that state of mind that reduces peripheral awareness in order to enhance a person's response to suggestion. One of the goals of hypnosis is to circumnavigate the critical faculties, those things in your mind that would kind of put up red flags, those things in your mind that would kind of say, they put on the brakes or say, no. Things get suppressed, and then suddenly now you can be in a hypnotic state really easily. Okay? We are much more suggestible when our critical faculties are lowered. So this guy right here, he's a theorist. He's actually one of the 20th century's most renowned experts on hypnosis. His name is Dave Ellman. arguably one of the most influential hypnotists of all times. And he defines hypnosis this way. So again, this is his definition. Hypnosis is a state of mind in which the critical faculty of a human is bypassed and selective thinking is established. Selective thinking could mean that you're doing it to yourself or you're allowing somebody else to selectively tell you how things are what reality is actually happening. Traditional individual hypnosis looks like this. Now, some of this is going to be a guy named Anthony Jaquin, and some of this is going to be a long time ago. I don't really do it as much anymore in my magic shows and stuff, but I'm going to show you just some examples of hypnosis, me doing it to individuals, okay? But the first guy is Anthony Jaquin. Hopefully we get some sound here. Good. We're good. So this is called the induction. The hypnotist takes the subject right now, and the subject is ready to be hypnotized, and he's basically giving him suggestions, and he's suggesting to him ways to be more suggestible. That's essentially the goal. It's telling him his head's like a bowling ball and all those things. So that first component where we're getting into. Once that happens, once you're in an induction, now a subject is given suggestions. Okay, so I told her that her wrist was bolted to her head, and now she believes it. And she can't get it off unless I take it off. I told her she couldn't remember her name. As soon as she moved her wrist, I told her name was gone. So now she doesn't have it. One of the big tricks that hypnotists often do is they tell somebody to forget a number. So now I'm telling them they can't remember the number 4. So now I'm giving him some math.
5 + 5 = 10. Yep. If you did 2 + 2 = 8, it's like a new math. Can't really do that, right? That's impossible.
She doesn't know the number 4 exists. Okay, so that's what hypnosis can look like. Okay, so I want you to notice, I'm clearly not telling these people true things. Okay, the subjects there, they're obviously false suggestions, because of course there's a number four. And of course they know their name for real. But if I tell them you don't know your name, this is something that because their critical drawbridge has been lowered, you're kind of able to get it, you're able to suggest things to them that they wouldn't normally think are even possible. It is said that you can't be hypnotized if you don't want to be, but people can certainly be suggested to or even be put into a very suggestible state without their knowledge. So just because you've never been hypnotized before, or you might even not believe in hypnosis, the thing is, that's sometimes what makes it work. And that's why when you sit in front of drama and you're seeing things that maybe you would, you know, maybe 5 years ago you wouldn't have thought about it, or maybe you would have had a problem with it, but now maybe you don't. Why? Because it's kind of just, we're drama is establishing new norms for us all the time. So, our critical faculties. Remember how the goal of hypnosis is to bypass a person's critical faculties? This can be done in two ways. A person willingly lets their critical drawbridge down. So, like a hypnosis show. Hypnosis shows are usually pretty tame. They're usually pretty, especially like in a high school setting or something like that, because, you know, a hypnotist wants to get hired and they want everybody to have a good time. But when a person drops their critical drawbridge without their knowledge, that can happen too. Okay, choice B happens more often than we think. Okay, the thinking, and I tell my students this all the time, the thinking that we do when we don't think we're thinking is the thinking that affects us the most. Will you guys repeat that with me? You can read it, it's right there, okay? The thinking that we do when we don't think we're thinking is the thinking that affects us the most. Okay, so by the way, the following clip involves no hypnotic induction, okay? So I showed you what an induction looks like. That's that whole thing where I got, you know, I got the two kids and I'm saying, okay, sleep, you know, and I'm telling them to sleep. It's because by that time, they've just sort of bought in that I'm the authority. I know what I'm doing. And so they let their critical drawbridge in. They basically let me in, okay? And so now I'm just telling them stuff that is entertaining, you know? So these now, what I'm about to show you is straight up suggestion. There is no induction. There is no trying to convince them to be more suggestible. But what it does is I don't ask anyone to sleep or to focus on relaxing. I ask a few questions of the group to check for suggestibility. And then I pick these volunteers who came right out of the audience of peers. Okay, so the technique here is straight up suggestion. And what I will just say is I did do a couple suggestibility tests to the whole audience. And then if I found some people were really listening to what I was saying, those are the people I brought up. Okay, no induction here whatsoever. And what this means is this can happen to us at any time and we can do it to ourselves, kind of by accident. It happens when we drive all the time. Okay, first one's amnesia. So I picked this girl out of the stage. I'm telling her that I'm making heat with my hands and she's gonna feel it. Okay, oh shucks. Rats, where am I? Oh no, oh, I've really done it. What? There. Okay. Let me just give you a little bit of background here. I'm doing this. I'm making friction with my hands, and I'm telling her that you're going to feel the heat. I'm creating a field of heat, and you will be able to feel it. And I'm not making any bones about it. I'm telling her she will. Okay. So I'm lying, basically, to her. Okay. Kind of like magicians do. Everybody knows magicians lie because that's the job. Okay. I'm going to tell you I make something disappear. I don't really make it disappear. I just make it go somewhere else. Okay, but with this, like I'm going like this, and I'm telling her, you're going to feel this. Immediately, she said to me, I don't know if you heard it, she goes, am I going to get burned? That's when I knew I had her. Okay, watch. Did you catch that?
About that and forget it.
I'm doing the Jedi move, you know? Learned that from Star Wars. She's got a name tag. I'm covering it up so she can't cheat.
What's my name? You know my name? My name's Pete. You know any of the other names? Who are you sitting next to? What's her name? Remember your name? What's her name? It's like you know what you're trying to crazy. Your name's completely gone. Look at it. If I take your hand just like this, and your pointer finger just like that, all I have to do is go like this. Not today. Jesse.
This girl was from London, so she's got an accent. So I'm tapping her head, I'm tapping her shoulder, I'm trying to get her to, I'm kind of distracting her brain, I'm getting her to feel things. Again, it's that emotion thing, it's the feelings. And somehow if you do that Jedi mind trick, people just equate it to, these are not the droids you're looking for. They know what you're trying to say to them. I don't even have to say it. She's looking up and to the left. She's searching for it. She doesn't have her name. Okay, she's showing the whole audience a card. And she took a look at the card. She knows the card. My son was the cameraman. He was 11 at the time. That's why it's a little shaky. Do you notice me tapping her here? When you're on stage and there's a lot of things happening, there's things like this, if you're kind of distracting the brain, sometimes it's just sort of, it doesn't know where to go. Okay, so that's, you get the idea, okay? Emotion, right? Notice how I try to get the subjects to feel something or to recall something. There's heat or song on the radio. These things appeal to our we would say our right brain, okay? These the soft side of the brain, not hard thinking, soft thinking, okay? Suggestibility is often tied close to emotion. And that's why, too, when I've got them here, I'm like, who's tapping me on this side? I'm over here, I'm tapping their head, and then I'm doing the Jedi mind moves and all this other stuff. All of this stuff is emotional kind of stuff that kind of just sort of tells them, wait, something's going on here. And so basically what they're telling themselves is something's going to happen. And so they do it to themselves. I was having a conversation at church with a guy, and he hypnotized me. He asked me, what do you teach? And immediately he was doing some things that suddenly my mind was like kind of just anchoring on some of the things that he was doing. And he asked me, what do you teach this semester? And I was like, I have no idea what I teach. You know, now it's not like it's gone. I just can't recall it. You know, it's not like these are being, but it looks supernatural. It looks like, it's just sort of a trick. It's not like this is gone from their brain. If they go home at night, they'll get it back, all that stuff. It's just that they can't recall it then at that moment. It's kind of like a glitch. Okay, and hypnotists have been, and not only that, theater and dramatists have been basically working on this stuff for years and years and years. It can look supernatural. That's why magicians love it. Magicians capitalize on suggestion, but people like faith healers can do it too. Notice in the following clip how much drama, music, and plain old showmanship, showbiz, can do work on the worked up emotion. And on this is I'm going to show you a clip of a faith healer. This guy's name is Benny Hinn. You've maybe flipped channels at night and you've maybe seen him. Also notice how the collective group responds and how that is so important here. This is great. I think this is fantastic, actually. Okay, so already, if you're in church and you're doing this, you're in a suggested state. You just are. Okay? You're ready for something to happen. Woo! There she goes, man. All he's got, that's the Jedi mind move right there. They're coming up to him. They're basically knowing they're going to fall over, thinking that there's going to be the power of God running through their veins. So he's playing the mystic, but he's doing it in the name of Jesus. And I find that a problem.
But when the Lord talks to me, I obey him. It's just that simple. There's nothing more to it.
Watch this. Whoa! Mows him down. This guy is not affected at all. This is a hypnosis show. This is what this is. Okay, I want you to watch this guy right here. He is so ready for it to happen. Whoa! And if you speak in tongues, it makes you even more the authority. Are you getting it? It's kind of, this is sort of the stuff that's happening here. Okay, so there are guys, you maybe have seen this guy on late night television, Tony Robbins. People pay millions of dollars to go to self-help gurus, to visit pop psychologists and life coaches. And I want you to watch the following video and see how this guy, Tony Robbins, employs the suggestion tools that we already talked about: authority, ceremony, passion, and patterns to whip up the emotions of those attending his Date with Destiny seminars. And the tickets, and back when I, back in like 2016, the tickets for this were $8,000 each. I'm sure they're more now, okay? Can you imagine paying $8,000 for a ticket? I need a car. Okay, I gotta hurry up, I'm getting the signal. All right, so we'll go with this. Okay, already, they're making a rock concert out of this. This is a psychologist, a pop psychologist. He's got dancers. He's written all these self-help books that you'll find in Barnes & Noble all the time. And they're bestsellers.
How big your life is, how big that area of your life where things are not as much as you'd like them to be. They're not as good. You want better or richer or deeper or more.
He's asking questions that, of course, the answer is yes for everybody all the time.
I just
said
about the
right ways. Stop right now. Point to me and show me where
the... By the way, the music that you're hearing is piped in the auditorium.
Right here. Put your hands on the pain and scream it with every ounce of you. Go. Put your hands on the pain.
Okay. So, you may have heard this. If you're a theater student, any theater students here? Okay, a couple of you, great. The audience is willing suspension of disbelief by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. An 1817 British poet and theater theorist, Samuel Taylor Coleridge coined the phrase the willing suspension of disbelief. The idea here is that when we are involved in a story, be it on stage or in a movie or if we read it in a book, we don't actually believe what we are seeing or reading is actually happening, but we willingly suspend our disbelief. That is, we willingly and quite automatically turn off our critical faculties, which are important. Remember critical faculties? Remember that? In order to become immersed in the story. So does that sound familiar? Remember this? Before I get to that. Okay, so this is the Wikipedia definition. The term suspended disbelief, or the willing suspension of disbelief, or the audience's willing suspension of disbelief, has been defined as the willingness to suspend one's critical faculties and believe the unbelievable, sacrifice of realism and logic for the sake of enjoyment. This is Dave Ellman's definition of hypnosis, you guys. It's the same. Hypnosis is a state of mind in which the critical faculty of the human is bypassed and selective thinking is established. Look at these are almost the same definition. And they're two different theorists. One guy's talking about drama. One guy's talking about hypnosis. And these are old things, okay? Coleridge was one of the lake poets. This is hundreds of years, or 200 years ago, let's say. So the willing suspension of belief. In reference to theater, Coleridge and other theorists call this the stage illusion. He says this, the true stage illusion is this, and all other things consists, not in the mind's judging it to be a forest, but in its remission of the judgment that it is not a forest. So he's establishing this interesting dramatic double negative for us, okay? But all of it is a means of influencing, of suggesting something, okay? Dramnosis, Scott Nehring again, that film critic. Basically what he's just saying here is when you are going to see something dramatic, You are in a form of hypnosis. I'm just trying to move quickly because I'm getting the flag. Okay, so earlier I talked about the types of suggestion, but it's important to remember that they all work together, okay? It's not like you got the basic suggestion, the persuasive suggestion, the hypnosis suggestion. They all work at different times, all together, all the time. Suggestion doesn't have to look supernatural or showy to be just as effective. The fact is we are all very susceptible to suggestion in its various forms, and even skeptics can be. The theorist Aristotle, in his Poetics, wrote down this: plot, character, theme, diction, music, spectacle, these are all the elements of drama and all can be used in ways that suggest things to us. Look at this guy. Oh, remember Mein Kampf? This is Hitler. Look at him. These are posed photos. He hired acting coaches. He took acting lessons. He hired photographers to take pictures of him doing dramatic poses so that when he gave his speeches, he knew how to persuade the most effectively using all of Aristotle's techniques. So what else uses the elements of drama? Rock concerts do. This is a political convention, reality TV, or just TV, all of these things. They're all around us all the time. Video games do. Music does now. Football does now. Okay? This may not seem as showy or as seeing a hypnosis show or a faith healer, but the application of dramatic elements can be every bit as powerful and influential medium. Okay? The natural state of our brain when we are watching entertainment is for our judgment to be in remission because we think we're going for something else. We think we go to something when we go to see drama, whether it's on screen or whether it's live, we think that we're going to see something that's entertaining. We don't think we're being taught. And that's when we can be taught something without our knowing it. Very easily. It's natural. It's just what happens to us. There's a reason Jesus told parables. There's a reason Jesus told stories. Because that's how we learn best. Okay? Influence that comes at us disguised as something else certainly has an enormous impact. That kind of influence has time on its side since it is so often undetected. And the power of drama is in its persistence. It's that tiny drop of water that slowly fills the pool. Or it's kind of like that Chinese water torture, you know, that drop of water that just keeps hitting after a while. Or it's the same thing, you know how to boil a frog? If you have a boiling pot of water and you throw a frog in there, what's going to happen? The frog jumps out. He's not going in there. That would be suicide. But if you put a frog in a tepid bowl of water and then bring that to a boil, the frog will stay in there and die. That's what's happening. Okay, so check some of the following clips and tell me if you can identify some of the things that are being suggested. I'm just going to show you. This one is from one of my favorite shows. This is a few... about a decade old. This is from the show Chuck. Mm-hmm. What's being suggested to us here? What's flying under the radar?
Oh. Sorry, I'm very excited to check with both of you to be moving together. But it's still happening. Yeah, absolutely. Right? You're fine in place? Yeah, not that I'm trying to reassure you.
Take your time, though. No pressure. You two let the birds need fun, and that's where you let the worm go to free. Thank you, Devin.
Do you need any help packing or throwing things away? Sarah, please tell Chuck that not everything in that room has to survive the move.
I'm making a list.
Making a list? Are you? And what, may I ask?
Oh, well, where should we begin? Maybe the trauma poster that you've had since you were 12.
Now, I've given this lecture to a number of different audiences. When I give this lecture to people who are my age and up, they immediately say, oh, what's being suggested? And they go, oh, well, they're moving in together. They immediately gravitate towards that. Was that the first thing you saw? Because a lot of times when I give this lecture to people in your age category, they don't see that at all. That was one of the main things. Oh, I'm so happy you're moving in together. How great. This is great. It's going to be fantastic. You need some room to let the worm wiggle free, he says. Is that what you saw? A lot of times it's missed. So that's kind of, is that a thing? Is that worthy of notation? Okay, this is from Pride and Prejudice. What's being suggested here? A little background. Okay, so this is Mr. Collins. He's a man of God, a man of the cloth. He's a preacher, and he's proposing marriage to a girl who will have nothing of it.
and reasons for marriage. Firstly, that it is the duty of a clergyman to set the example of matrimony in his parish. Secondly, that I am convinced it will have great aid to my happiness. And thirdly, that it is at the urging of my esteemed patron, Lady Catherine, that I select a wife. My object in coming to Longbourn was to choose such a one from among Mr. Penny's daughters, for I am to inherit the estate, and such an alliance will surely suit everyone. And now, nothing remains but for me to assure you in the most animated language of the violence.
You are too hasty, sir. You forget that I have given no answer.
I understand. Lady Catherine, I may prove how much you have of your modesty, economy, and other amiable qualities.
Sir, I am honoured by your proposal, but I regret that I must decline it.
I know ladies don't seek to seem too
easy. Mr. Collins, I am perfectly serious. You could not make me happy, and I'm convinced I'm the last woman in the world who could make you happy.
I've had myself cousin in your refusal to me in natural delicacy. Besides, if you take into account the despicable manifold attractions, it's by no means certain that another offer of marriage may ever be made to you.
Mr. Collins!
So I must conclude that you simply seek to increase my love by suspense.
Sir!
According to the usual practice of elegant females.
Sir! I am not a sort of female to torment a respectable man. Please understand me, I cannot accept you.
Oh, bummer. Okay, so with the violence of his affections, right, and the most animated language that he can do. Okay, so what's being suggested here? Just because I'm on a time crunch, I'll tell you what I think. First of all, he's a clergyman, and it's a hundred. This happens again and again and again. Clergymen are made to look foolish in drama for hundreds of years, and in novels. This is Jane Austen. She's, you know, I love Jane Austen. But clergymen, she's not kind to clergymen, ever, 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 ever. Okay, so Molière says, to expose men's vices to everyone's laughter. Molière's a playwright from the 1700s in France. Okay, he says, to expose men's vices to everyone's laughter is to deal them a mighty blow. People easily endure reproofs, but they cannot endure being made fun of. People have no objection to being considered wicked, but they are not willing to be considered ridiculous. This is echoed by Rousseau, who says, ridicule is the favorite weapon of vice. This is echoed by Schiller, who says, hatred does not wound the conscience so much as mockery does the pride of a man. Where we allow a friend to correct our morals, we rarely forgive a laugh. Comedy, as it turns out, is one of the most suggestible forms of entertainment. One thing, common themes, you should notice this, and you probably have noticed this. These themes are very common in entertainment these days. And heads up on the following. These are things that you've probably seen. If you haven't, keep your head up for them. After you leave, see if you can't find this in your own examples. First of all, Christianity is foolish, and those who practice it are ignorant or anti-science. Have you seen that in shows? It's like if you're looking for it, you'll see it all the time. Premarital sex is normal and commonplace. Nudity is almost an expectation now in film. How many people, when you see a nude scene, it's like, hmm. When I was in high school and I saw a nude scene, I was like, what? Is everybody seeing this? I can't believe it. What? But now it's like Game of Thrones. Nude fest, right? Homosexuals in drama are usually depicted as the voices of reason. Femininity is predominantly wiser than masculinity. Follow your heart, it'll never lead you wrong. This is the theme of just about every Disney movie ever. And the Bible has distinct things to say against following your heart. It's probably the last thing we should follow. If it feels good and you are not hurting anyone, you should do it. And the world is millions of years old and was randomly formed. And that one is, of course, just about fact. It's not. But it's a sacred cow now. Okay, a popular one now. Lately, the transgender question has come all over the news, movies, TV shows. This is actually kind of old news now, and now has entered the area of social policy and law. Can you think of an instance particularly two years ago, when I was kind of forming all these ideas into this lecture, where it had not been propagandized without a whole lot of emotion, passion, and the introduction of authority, all of which are tenets of the persuasion and influence piece. I want to show you a video here. What I want you to notice is to what great lengths students at Washington University, when this film was made 2 years ago, to what great lengths they will suspend any kind of logic for what they can feel. Okay, here it is.
Are you aware of the debate happening in Washington State around the ability to access bathrooms, locker rooms, spas based on gender identity and gender expression?
I think bathrooms could and potentially should be gender neutral because there doesn't need to be a classification for differences.
I think people definitely should have the ability to go to whichever locker room they want.
I feel like at least public universities should do their best to accommodate for those who do not have a specific gender identity.
You know, whether you identify as male or female and whether your sex at birth is matching to that, you should be able to utilize the resources.
If I told you that I was a woman, what would you respond to?
Good for you, okay. Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
I don't have a problem with it.
If I told you that I was Chinese, what would you respond to?
I mean, I would be a little surprised, but I'd say, good for you. Be who you are.
I would maybe think you had some Chinese ancestor.
I would ask you how you suddenly came to that conclusion, and why you came to that conclusion.
If I told you that I was 7 years old, what would your response be?
He's really trying to test him. And they can't say, no, you're not. They can't do it.
I probably wouldn't believe it, but I mean, it wouldn't really bother me that much to go out my way and tell you, no, you're wrong. I'd just be like, oh, okay, he wants to play 7 years old.
If you feel seven at heart, then it's okay, yeah, good for you.
So if I wanted to enroll in a first grade class, you think that should be allowed to?
Probably not, I guess. I mean, unless you haven't completed first grade up to this point.
He was so close to saying no.
I would say as long as you're not hindering society and you're not causing harm to other people, I feel like that should be an okay thing.
If I told you I'm 6 feet, 5 inches, what would you say?
He's a short guy.
Why?
Because you're not. No, I don't think you're.
If you truly believe you're 6'5", I don't think that's harmful. I think it's fine if people doesn't matter to me if you're taller than you are.
So you're willing to tell me I'm wrong?
Nope.
I can tell you you're wrong.
Sure, she couldn't.
No,
it's impossible to tell you you're wrong.
You are.
I feel like that's not my place. As like an advocate to say someone is wrong or to draw lines around.
Did you hear that?
No, I mean, I would just feel like, oh, you're wrong. Like, that's wrong with what you make. So, I mean, yeah, it doesn't really bother me.
It's not my place to tell another human that they're wrong,
so
she said.
I can be a Chinese woman.
She can't do it. Is this like a hypnosis show to you?
You thoroughly debated me or explained why you felt that you were 6'5". I feel like I would be very open to saying that you were 6'5", or Chinese, or woman.
If you properly debated me and told me why you think you're 6'5", I would be willing to say you're 6'5", or a woman. What? This is like the same kind of stuff. This is exactly the same. I'm just telling you guys, the videos that I've shown you of the hypnosis show, the videos that I've shown, this is suggestion. Do you get the feeling that these guys have let down the drawbridge, that they have let down their critical faculties? Big time, like a lot. They are suspending their logic. Notice to what very obvious lengths they will go to defy logic even, in order to cling to these suggestions, okay? Have they been deceived is the question. Thanks, I'm going to be done in a minute or two. Is this what passes for truth? Because outside of these walls, perchance, they probably would say, yeah, well, truth is relative. But is it really? So the circle of deception, of course, just because someone is not a liar doesn't mean, or someone, because someone is not a liar doesn't mean that they can't be spreading lies and untruths. We all do it, okay? That's what rumors are even. We are all susceptible, we are all imperfect, and we all give way to sin. But as Christians, we are privy to the truth because we know it. We believe it by faith. We can't prove what the Bible says is true, but it stands under scrutiny when nothing else will. And this is the whole idea of apologetics. Apologetics is not to prove that the Bible is right, but to demonstrate how it cannot be disproven, and nobody can. Okay, so as Christian learners, what can we do? I'm going to skip this slide. No, I'm not. I'm going to go back on that one. Okay. As a place to start, here's the thing. A skill that is easily missed, and I'd say this is true even in Christian education at the elementary level. I think that we are not teaching our kids necessarily how to critique even things like art or drama, and what is our intent to develop Christian discernment. We can ask ourselves, in the world of the play, in the world of the drama, what is morality and what is immorality? What is wisdom? What's wisdom in that world? And what is foolishness? Okay? So the more the world of the story mimics our own world, the more influential power it has. Students should learn that every story has an angle from those who've created it. You should know, whenever you're sitting in front of any kind of drama, and that's even now advertising, and it's games. You are sitting down in front of a worldview of somebody who's programming something for you. And they really are. That's kind of their intent a lot of times. And you just want to be aware. I think that if you're aware, that's half of it. That's half the battle. Okay? Students should ask, what are the redeeming qualities of this piece of drama that I'm watching? What is the overall message of the piece that might be obvious? But what are the messages beneath the surface? What are the things that are not obvious? Expectations of behavior, morality, wisdom, foolishness? What are the norms of the world of drama, as we're watching it, that should be noted? And how do these norms stand up to the Christian view? And I'll just remind us of John 17:6-19, just that whole idea of in the world. As Christians, we are in the world, not of the world. As Christian learners, what else can we do? Here's just an example. Fire is arguably one of the most useful elements, philosophically speaking, known to man. Its myriad of uses has shaped how we live in countless ways. So fire is good. It's good we have fire. We wouldn't be able to be sitting here in this room with all these great things. We wouldn't be able to turn on hot water if we didn't have a knowledge of and an appreciation for fire. However, if not taught about the harmful effects of fire, people could be put into great danger and extreme risk. Drama's kind of like that. You should know a little bit about it. I feel like everybody should. Okay, drama is not to be condemned, kind of like this book. You know, this book kind of says never. You know, drama's bad. We should never go to there. They are houses of ill repute. I don't believe that. I don't believe, because now I teach drama. I love drama. I write drama. But drama is so it's not to be condemned, but it's extremely important that it be understood. In light that we are all both saint and sinner, that whole idea, simul justus et peccator, at the same time saint and sinner, we should strive to lead by example and to live by example. As Christian learners, what else can we do? Protect your critical faculties. I'm just encouraging you to do that all the time. And be aware of leaning too heavily on one's emotions for truth. So often, you're going to see it. I hope that after you go away from this lecture, you're going to see how often emotion plays in our society. You know, what decisions many, many, many people make just based on their emotions. And take note of it, because it's really easy to see when you look. Okay? Remember, one's conscience and emotions are not the same thing. And then, finally, this is my dad's advice always, and I think it's great advice. Pray to God for wisdom all the time. If Solomon can do it, we can do it. To discern truth from deception according to his holy word. Okay? To some, this lecture, I know, might seem like common sense or just a nice reminder. To many, I can assure you, it's not. I've had a lot of people who say, wow, this is really brand new stuff for me. I would love for this discussion to continue in all of our respective disciplines. And so the whole idea here is Seinfeld again.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie
If you believe.
So the question is that true? Of course it's not true. It's still a lie. You know, that's why they call Satan the father of lies. Colossians 2, 6 through 8. Beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit according to the traditions of men, according to the basic principles of the world, and not according to Christ. Finally, brethren, whatever, and this is, to me, I feel like this should be every artist's manifesto right here. Philippians 4, 8. I've got this posted on the bulletin board right outside my door. Whatever is true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, lovely, of good report, if there's anything virtuous, anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. And that is the end of the speech. So I don't know if there's like time for questions or what kind of thing. So are we done?
No time for questions.
No time for questions. You guys, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the time. Sorry if it went a little long.